when we were in the NFL, Marcia used to book a plane ticket the day after the season was over, and we'd go away for a week. And I don't even know if I knew where we were going necessarily.
You didn't.
You know, you just used to book a plane ticket. And so this is like 2 days after that game or so, and our son is just 1 year old, and we're in
Florida. Yeah,
we're in South Florida somewhere, and we get on this golf cart to drive wherever we're going. Someone else is driving the golf cart, and I sit down on a golf cart, and a guy sits down next to me, and I'm holding my son on my lap. And he looks at me, he goes, "What the hell happened in that playoff game the other day?" And I thought to myself, I'm trying to hide right now. And this guy in the middle of South Florida, while I'm holding my son on a golf cart at a resort in the middle of nowhere, asks me, "What the hell happened?" And I said, "Well, we did go 13-3, you know."
Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels.
Hi, I'm Matt Bush, the news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio, and I help the Shoups produce Going Deep. In this episode, we tackle a topic that all of us feel, whether we're sports fans or not, but it might be something we don't want to delve too deeply into during our day-to-day lives. Losing. Just what is it about losing that makes people say things or act out in ways their rational selves would never even dream of? I pose that question to Reverend Mount Shoup, and as you might expect, she starts her answer steeped in theology.
Losing is existentially painful for even people that one could say are sort of tangentially connected. It doesn't really have a material impact on their life unless they bet money, and those people do get really upset when you don't make the spread or whatever. But what is it about being a part of a losing team or being associated with a losing team that is so repulsive to people? And I think it is this deep existential fear that you are unlovable, and that unless you get everything right, unless you're a winner, unless you put your best foot forward, unless you say everything's fine, unless everything appears to be great, you're not going to be somebody who people want to be with. Nobody likes a loser. And I think we fans are angry when you lose, because somehow it is an affront to their status in the community that you have now put them in the loser category. When, you know, nothing else in their life is going right either. Why can't this go right? And there's a also kind of a deep existential fear of moral chaos, that there is no rhyme or reason to why good things happen, that bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. And when your team, the people you think are good, lose, there is something very bewildering about, like, but we're the good guys. We're supposed to win. And that, what does that say about the universe, that the good guys come in last today or whatever it is? So I think there's a deep existential angst around losing that people are not conscious of necessarily, but it gets right down that very tender, raw place of, am I lovable? Am I valuable? Am I somebody that lives in a world where there is kind of a moral order to the way things work?
Winning and losing in the game of football is kind of becoming malleable. Football is the only game in the world where the same people don't play offense and defense. There's two separate teams. In today's game, in college, even in high school to a degree, but in college, in the NFL especially, there's an offensive team and there's a defensive team. And players and coaches have really become independent contractors. And I have asked coaches, called them after a game and said, "Did you win?" And they said, "Well, we scored 45 points. "Well, did you win?" "Well, we had 520 yards. "Yeah, but did you win?" "Well, our defense couldn't hold them, you know, and so we lost 47 to 45. An offensive coach might say that. Now, I was an offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach for a long time. And there are certainly times in games where we've scored 40-some plus points and the defense didn't play great and we ended up losing the game after scoring a lot of points. And I'd be like, nuts. You know, I did my part. What the heck's going on? And then there's also been weekends where our defense played great and maybe held them to 10 points and we could only manage to get 7. And I felt, golly, I just let this entire team down. And so there's a dynamic in sports right now, in football right now, where there's kind of two separate teams on every single team. And does a locker room have good morale if they win a game 52-50? Well, the offense has good morale, but the defense, when they go into that week, is starting to wonder, are we going to have our jobs at the end of the year? What's going on? And does a team have good morale if they win a football game 7-3? Well, the defense feels pretty good about holding a team to 3 points, but the offense is like, oh my gosh, we got to get more than 7 points. Are we going to have a job at the end of the year? And so winning and losing is, there's certainly been times where I felt like I gave a winning effort out there, but we didn't win the game. Or I didn't give a great effort out there, and we still somehow find a way to win the game. And so it's kind of a crazy, unusual feeling. And style points and how you win does matter in football today, and especially in college football. It matters. Coaches have in their contracts, I know offensive and defensive coaches that have bonuses in their contracts around statistics. And so an offensive coach, for instance, if we are in the top 10 of the country in terms of yardage, I get a bonus. Top 5, I get a bigger bonus. And so if you are playing the University of Alabama and, you know, get shut out and don't gain a lot of yards, that's really going to hurt your chances at getting a bonus. But next week, if you play Podunkalo University, who stinks, and you've got a chance to run up 70 points and run up 700 yards on them, you got to do it because you need to boost your average to meet your bonuses. And so I think sometimes coaches on offense feel like we won the game, and coaches on defense sometimes feel like we won the game, no matter what the outcome on the scoreboard is. And I think those incentives and contracts, I think those are part of what's toxic about big-time football.
Well, and what you're describing is those are simply the kind of features that help to create the culture of football. So those didn't just bubble up in a vacuum. I think it goes back to what Matt asked at the very beginning. Why is losing such a terrible proposition? it's such a terrible proposition that all of this, you know, all of this apparatus has been created to create different ways to win.
Yes.
Different ways to, you know, bring in some kind of benefit or payoff from this business. One could say that it keeps people engaged on some level, if you could look at it that way. But on another level, it only reiterates that people don't want to lose. It hurts too much, it costs too much, and it's not something that people can sit with. We haven't been socialized in the United States in this. It's, you know, capitalism is about winning. Our politics is about winning. Even religion is about winning for many people. And so we have not been able to get very good or skilled at sitting with loss. Our culture is not a good, we're not good grievers in this culture. I know that as a pastor, that people often are like, I just have to get back to normal. I just don't, you know, and it's like, actually grief is a physical process that you have to go through. And if you try not to, you'll lose in the end. I mean, it's something you have to be able to do. And part of the reason that's so hard for people is they were never socialized or formed in their families, in their churches, in their institutions, in their own hearts to live with loss and not let that be some kind of personal failure, even if it was something that wasn't in their control. I mean, like cancer or, you know, their spouse dying early. All those things in our culture can somehow come back to personal failure, and that people don't really want you around if you're the person who's sad or grieving. And I think everything you just described, John, is just an example of how much football is, you know, kind of habituated to avoid the sting of losing, you know?
It's interesting because I think even for fans today, they can find ways to avoid that sting of losing. And that's a good way to put it. Or find ways to get wins. And you see it in fantasy football. Matt, you and I both grew up in Pittsburgh. And if you weren't rooting for the Steelers, you were probably going to, you know, you weren't going to have many friends in town. Well, today, even if the Steelers lose, people who play fantasy football can still find ways to pocket some wins. So if your favorite team loses, but you had a quarterback for another team who threw for 3 touchdowns, a running back who ran for 2, you can still find a way to have been a winner during the weekend. What I'm saying is it's the same thing for coaches now in big-time sports. Mm-hmm. Many coaches don't go into a game thinking, what do we have to do to win the game? They go into a game thinking, as an offensive coordinator, what do I have to do to have 450 yards of offense and 40 points? And sometimes that's not in the best interest of winning the game. I can remember one time at Carolina, we were playing Clemson, and we beat Clemson. With Dabo Swinney, we beat Clemson 17-14. And we held the ball in the fourth quarter for 13 to 15 minutes. And I thought it was one of the best games I've ever called in my life. But we only won 17-14. It was a pretty tight game. And after the game, a reporter asked me what happened to the offense. And I said, are you crazy? We held the ball for 15 minutes, kept their offense on the sideline, our defense on the sideline, and absolutely dominated that game when it mattered most. I thought it was a great effort. Yeah, but you only scored 17 points.
Mm-hmm.
Those elements, meeting statistical goals, are wins for coaches, are wins for players, are wins for fans. they're not necessarily team wins.
But it's interesting to me as I listen to you talk how invisible that whole thing is in terms of the way coaches are thinking. Like, most people don't know that stuff. But if you get a player that gets a label as a free agent, or he's just in it for himself, mm-hmm. or he's just a hot shot who wants to get the ball and they become a problem. And so it's interesting to think about how this fits into this, that players who are finding a way to win as individuals are, you don't really want them around. They're not good team players. But coaches are doing it all the time and benefit from that. It's actually, I had never thought about it that way until I just heard you talking. And my brain is going back to certain players who, especially in the NFL, who kind of had that reputation of they don't really care about the team. They just care about themselves. They're just trying to get their next big contract. And you really don't hear that out in the public discourse as much about coaches who are actually, it's more common that coaches are doing that in the system that you describe. Just something to think about.
You've written in your book, Touchdowns for Jesus, about this playoff game. And I'm sorry to bring this playoff game up because the team you were coaching, John, did lose the Bears. But this was in the 2001 season. The Bears had won the division title. They were at mm-hmm. home for the first playoff game, and they lost to the Eagles. You talked about how the fans were reacting throughout the game and how vicious they were getting throughout mm-hmm. it. I guess really my question really to you is, John, is how, when you lose a game like that and then it's a tough loss, I don't want to say how quickly do players and coaches get over it, but what's it like in the locker room after one of those losses? And I guess then in the offices for the, you know, days and weeks afterwards, what's it like? Because for a fan, that loss might stay with them for until the next season. Mm-hmm. But what's it actually like for the people who are playing and coaching the games after a loss like that?
Yeah, well, that 2001 Chicago Bears team, we went 13-3 in the regular season, and we had an amazing, amazing man who was our head coach, a guy named Dick Geron. And so he did a good job of setting the mood for the entire team, not just the offense, not just the defense, but the entire team. And he's probably one of the most influential men in my life, let alone coaches. But he really believed that if we played our absolute best, if we played up to our potential, as long as we don't underachieve, we'll live with the results. And I felt like that season, losing the playoff game, we ended up losing four games. The thing I felt after that game is we probably didn't play as well as we possibly could have played. Having said that, we lost three games earlier in the year, twice to Green Bay and once to the Baltimore Ravens, who were just coming off a Super Bowl. And I thought we played great football in those games. We just fell short. The thing that stung about that game is I felt like we underachieved a little bit as a team, especially offensively, when we had an injury to our starting quarterback, a guy named Jim Miller. And it does. It sits with you, especially when it's the last game of the season. Mm-hmm. One of the things about the NFL and big-time college football is, you know, it'll sit with a fan all week long what happens. If you lose a game in the middle of the season, say in college, you lose on Saturday, on Sunday morning you watch the tape, by Sunday night you're on to the next opponent. In the NFL, if you lose on Sunday, Monday morning, you watch the tape. By Monday afternoon, I used to tell our staff all the time, we need to tear off the rearview mirror and be on to the next opponent. And that always helped me diving into the next opponent. When it's the end of the season, mm-hmm. it does kind of sit with you a little bit longer.
And there's only one team in the NFL that can end the season feeling good.
Yeah.
That's the truth in any sport.
Only one team
gets to feel good at the end.
But I think it was a really important tone set by our head coach that his goal, and he used to even use this language, was we can't underachieve. He used to say more games are lost than are won. I don't want to lose a game. You know, if we play well and a team beats us, I can survive that. But it sits with fans, it sits with commentators a lot longer than it sits with coaches and players when it's in the season.
It sits with wives longer, too. Yeah. I can remember how this was true no matter what team you were with, but definitely you feel it more in these big markets, you know, where – like in Chicago where it's all over the paper, you can't listen to the radio that day, and all that week people are talking about it. And I always really tried to take my cues from John and how he was feeling, and he would. He would come home that next day, and he would already be on to the next thing. And I might have had to, you know, go to the grocery store and see the paper headlines or something like that. I might be carrying that sadness around a lot more than he is, because he has something to dig into next. And all I have is like, I hope next week is better. Can we hurry up and get to that? And I mean, literally, like on nights when he would lose, I did not sleep those nights. I just felt so horrible for him, for the players, for myself, that I was going to have, and I can remember thinking this, I've got to spend the whole week now feeling this way. And John's right, when it's the end of the season, you're like, gosh, we're in the losing column for the next however many months. And it gets into your psyche that way. The other thing I want to mention that gets lost in some of this is, you know, I was a pretty involved spouse in all those years. We talked, John and I are good friends. We talk a lot. So we would talk a lot about the games, about how he was doing, about how I was doing, about how our family was doing. I talked to the players. Sometimes they'd come out to our house and just talk. And the last season that we were at UNC and the last season that we were at Purdue are two of the best coaching jobs I've ever seen a human being do. And this is coming from somebody who was an athlete on many winning teams through my life. Were the best coaching job I ever saw a human being do, but definitely John. In that he was teaching those guys how to get back up, dust yourself off, and get back out there and do what you need to do. Do your job with dignity. Don't apologize for yourself, but also don't be afraid to look at what you did wrong. What could you do better? And both of those years, I feel like our relationships with the players really deepened a ton. Like we got to know them as human beings. They got to know what they were made of. And that was another thing that made it difficult, when those kind of seasons where you literally pour your heart and soul into it, and then it ends with you get fired or you have to feel bad because you lost or whatever. That's another place where we don't have good mechanisms as a culture to say, you know what, that too was really valuable for our community, that these young men learned how to deal with adversity and how to deal with grief. I mean, really, what the last season at Purdue was about was some grief. There was a lot going on the campus with racism. There was a lot going on in the country. There was a lot, and those guys were really processing it almost through the losses that they were experiencing. And I mean, I don't think any of those players would argue that that season didn't make them better human beings. I know it made us better human beings. And you don't get a prize after that.
One thing I guess I was thinking about, it was you were saying with that one game, maybe the team didn't play as well. Is there sort of a level with how maybe a team loses and makes it easier or more difficult to take if there's a game where maybe you don't play well and that's why you lose, or versus maybe you played a team that is just better than you and that said it was nothing you were going to do? Or is it maybe the third kind of loss where there's some critical moment that changes the entire game, and it may be because of a blown officials call and all that sort of thing?
Oh, those are the worst.
Don't get
those
started on officials.
So I guess there's certainly a way we react to all three of those kinds of losses, right? Does that make it any easier or tougher?
You know, I've had a lot of praise and I've had a lot of criticism. And all my critics as a play caller can rest assured I've been my own worst critic. And I can certainly look at a game and say, I did the best. Nobody could have done better than that right there. I did as good a job as I could have done in that situation. And as I said, Dick Geron taught me, if as long as we didn't underachieve, if we played up to our absolute capability, I felt good about that. Mm-hmm. And I've come home after games when our team has lost, and I said, you know, I think we played as well as we can possibly play. That's about all I could do. Otherwise, you're going to die. You can't do this for 30 years, or I did it for 27, and survive. But there have been times as well where I've thought to myself, golly, I don't think I gave our team the best opportunity, not in the game plan, not in the play selection, not in anything that we've done. Having said that, I don't think I've ever called a game where I haven't come back and thought, you know, looking back at it again, I mean, there's 70 to 100 plays in a game. Man, I wish I'd have called this instead of that. I wish I'd have called this instead of that. But as long as I had a reason, and sometimes that reason might be my gut, you know, years of training and wisdom that you have in the sport. A reason could be your gut. That's why I called that play. If I had a reason for it, I was okay. But there were days, certainly, where I thought, ooh, that's one I'd like to forget about. And those are hard days.
I think the hardest kind of losses are the ones where, like, no game comes down to one play. I don't care what people say. There are always causes and conditions that lead up to, you know, maybe there's some last-minute horror show that happens, but it's never just one person's fault. But I think the losses that are the hardest are the ones where there is the appearance that one person lost it. Like when one of John's players would fumble, or there would be an interception, or we'd miss a field goal. Those, to me, are the hardest losses, when somehow one person is kind of set apart and has to carry that. My heart just broke for those people. And sometimes John felt the same way I did, but sometimes he was like, well, they should have caught the ball.
Well, I do think in sports, I do think it's important to be really good when it matters. You know, like in the game of golf, there's people on Thursday afternoon that may check in with a -3, but Sunday afternoon they're at +12. Well, you need to be good when it matters. And having said that, I know I've always been better with, not okay, but better with physical mistakes. I know people drop balls. I know kicks happen. And it's frustrating. What really would frustrate me even more, though, would be mental mistakes. If a player didn't prepare, or a coach didn't help prepare his players the way they needed to prepare, that's what didn't sit with me.
as you were talking about that playoff game with the Bears, I was looking this up, and I looked the details of something up about it. But the other game that night, the game that was played that night? Now, I will ask you, would you have rather lost that way or lose the game that was played that night? The game that was played that night after the Bears game was the Tuck Rule game between the Patriots and Raiders.
Oh, yeah, that was that night.
So
I don't think we watched it. We were in mourning.
I'm sure you didn't, but it's a game that's now become into NFL lore because it was totally changed on an official's call and an interpretation of a rule. And had the Patriots lost that game, I think maybe everything that this whole dynasty they've had this
There's
whole
no
century
doubt.
Doesn't happen.
You could ask John Gruden. He would say John Gruden and Al Davis would say the same thing. Al Davis, if he was alive,
yeah.
If it wasn't for that Tuck Rule, they'd have just been the New England Patriots, and you know.
So there are again ways of losing. I mean, that think of losing that game that way.
That's what I was gonna say. I think if you're honest with the world. The ones where you are the maddest, and I was mad right along with you, are when the officials were the determining factor in a game.
Well, as you said, nobody's the determining, but certainly one of the most frustrating things in football, and it even happens in high school, but high school, college, and in the NFL is... If there's a poor officiating, and officials have good games and bad games just like players do, poor officiating, and I was always adamant about sending in the officials' errors to the league office, whether it's the NFL, the ACC, the Big Ten. One of the frustrating things to me was when you get a letter back from them or an email back from them saying, yeah, sorry, we missed that one.
And it cost you the game.
And you're like, yeah, you know, we didn't convert a 3rd and 8 on the plus 20. You know, yeah, thanks, you know. And there have been times where I just wanted to call back out to all the media people and say, hey, just so you know, they said they missed it. They should have called that. But now that I'm out of it, I can say, well, that's part of the game. Boy, when I was in it,
that would make you madder than
give you a run attack.
That would make you madder than anything. I remember.
Now, reading about the Tuck Rule game afterwards, John Gruden said, and it was his last game as head coach of the Raiders. He then went to the Buccaneers. He's now back with the Raiders. But said after this, they're never going to let this team win. It was almost as if it was some sort of NFL conspiracy. And, you know, given the Raiders' reputation.
It did feel like that sometimes. Yeah. It does feel like that sometimes. Like the powers that be are against you and the officials are... Really, everything that they could possibly call against you, they call against you.
Well, I'm not sure I've ever been on a team where I felt like, gosh, these officials are in favor
of us. They're really on our side.
I don't think I've ever
felt
that.
No one ever feels that it is that.
Yeah.
This is unfortunately more of a downer way to sort of wrap this up. But this was something that happened in 2018 that really stood out to me and always just kind of did. It was really, to me, a very heartbreaking comment. We're talking about a soccer player named Mesut Ozil. He's was born in Germany but is of Turkish descent. In 2014, Germany won the World Cup, and he was one of the star players. He's one of the best players in the world, plays for Arsenal professionally. 2018, Germany did not get out of the initial round. It was one of the first times, maybe the first time ever, where the defending champion did not get into the knockout round of the World Cup. Now, again, remember this, Mesut Ozil was born in Germany, but is of Turkish descent and is very much part of his identity. He ended up leaving the German team afterwards, talking about some of the ways that he was handled and felt that there was some racism regarding this and sort of situations. But really, this was a comment not just about, I think, it wasn't just a comment about the German Football Federation. It was about the fan base and I think just in general how people accept losing. Mm-hmm. His comment was, I'm German when we win, an immigrant when we lose.
Yeah.
That's really heartbreaking to me to think about that. But it also says something about how losing brings out the worst in people. And it exposes just these awful, awful things. I just wanted you guys to talk about that, of just going back to that again of losing just, it makes people do just terrible things.
Yeah, I can say for sure that I always felt like my place in that community, whether it was Chapel Hill, West Lafayette, the city of Chicago, Oakland, Tampa, Charlotte, my place was conditional. We had to win. If we didn't win, it was like, you know, I was a leper walking down the street. Some neighbors wouldn't even say hi. People, and it's not always their fault. People don't know what to say, if you know, how to handle it sometimes. But for 27 years of our lives, I've always felt like my place in this community is conditional. I didn't go to the University of North Carolina. I'm not alum. I'm only welcome here as long as we win. Mm-hmm. And every team I've ever been a part of, I felt that.
Yeah. And it is heartbreaking. And again, that's a part of it, gets us right back to where we started. It kind of makes true your worst fear, that people only like us if we win. And while all those years that John was in football, there was always like this whole cycle, like you get to town and everybody thinks you're the coolest. I mean, everybody wants to be your friend and you're getting invited to stuff. And then, you know, you might have good times and bad times, but in the bad times, you really do learn like who your true friends are. And there aren't that many. I mean, really, there aren't that many.
And to bring this into it, talking about race within this, too, because that's what his comment really focuses on.
Yeah.
It just way it brings out people's racism.
It does. And you see that that was always there.
Right.
And so we saw that. That was one of the most horrifying parts of what happened at UNC in the NCAA investigation. All of those players were black that were, you know, thrown under the bus in the NCAA investigation. It didn't take 15 seconds for people to begin talking about them in very racialized terms, coded ways, but very racialized terms. They should have just been happy to be here. They don't know how to act right. You know, they were never really a part of this place anyway. It was as if the school had done them a favor, just like this soccer player. Like, we did you a favor to let you be German for a little while. But now, you know, you don't cut the muster, so you're not. And that's exactly the language that was used, is that they're not really Tar Heels. They don't know the Carolina way. We heard that over and over and over again. And we, too, felt that way. I mean, at the church where I worked, people wouldn't pass the peace with us in church. Because why? Because John got fired or because we were losing or whatever it was. And it's it really taps into that existential, terrifying place that I guess I'm really not lovable as who I am. I have to do all these things to really be okay for people. And part of that really perpetuates this kind of pathological work ethic that coaches have, and the what players are willing to sacrifice. Players are willing to give up so much just to have that feeling again of being a winner and being somebody that, when they walk down the street in their community, people are like, "Hey, how are you doing? That was an awesome game." People will do anything to have that.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.